X gon' give it to you. Cool PTZ cameras, like you got. I could actually. I just need a different lens. But now
you need to fix your fucking life, bro. That's what you
now
need to
that
do.
Now that I have a well-paying job. I don't know if anybody remembers or even watched episode one. Don't worry, it was a train wreck. We talked about pedophiles in jail and.
Well, how about we start this real quick?
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Hey, you are listening and watching the Mind Meld podcast with Dave and Ryan. Welcome to the show. Ryan, why don't you give me a little update about, I feel like some things have happened in your life since the last time we discussed.
Yes, it's been.
And we talked extensively about pedophiles in the Catholic Church, but let's give me a ray of sunshine. Hit me with some of that positivity in your life.
Current positivity is I am training for a 10K. I've already done 10Ks. That's just over 6 miles for those that don't know the, that system.
Americans who use the American system of measuring and democracy. Yeah,
the for imperial. Sure. So getting back on that road. Then I also got.
Why?
Why?
Just I don't mean that. Oh, no. I don't mean that's snobbily. It just, you know, what's inspiring that?
Oh, just to maintain a healthy lifestyle. That's it. That's
love it.
To do something physical and to push my body, you know, because I don't have to be the fastest. I just have to be faster than you. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Hey,
yeah, that's what they say. If you're getting chased by a lion or something, I just need to be faster than you. Yeah. Or zombies. Yeah.
You know,
that's true. Yeah.
It's possible.
So having a goal as opposed to just like, I run every day because that's good for my health.
Correct.
It's like training for something and having an end result is more motivating to you.
Right. Yeah. And again, I've already done this before. Because I felt like running that far. And also to see if I could do it. So, you know, checking the box. So now I'm like, you know what? Let me just train. Let me properly train. And that kind of goes into what the other ray of sunshine that you asked for was that I officially got the job we spoke of. And
nice. Congratulations.
It's it basically nothing's changed in the automotive industry in 3 years, except the benefits packages. that's about it. Ladies and gentlemen, you're not missing much. The technicians still hate the advisors. The advisors still hate the technicians and we all hate the customers, but we need you. Cool. So cool.
Yeah.
that is the most deadpan answer. If the automotive industry carte blanche, right? Like that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
But no,
you're feeling good and optimistic about it. And
yeah. It's challenging. I have to become one of the best technicians in that area, in 4 months because I am expected to lead this team going forward. So I haven't had this much responsibility weighted on me since the Marine Corps. I'll just get
since Nam.
Yeah. Since Charlie was in the fucking bushes.
He's still there.
He's always watching.
Well, congrats, man. I'm happy for you. I know that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I think you and I have similar lives in that, like, you have had a lot of transition and transitory states in your life.
Yes.
And I think being able to be like reflexive and elastic
fluid.
Yeah, fluid and roll with the punches, but also know what parts of the flow to push against.
Correct.
for your own benefit and other things to be like, okay, this is the way I'm going right now.
Right.
So good on you, man.
Thanks.
I'm happy to see you land on your feet as long as it doesn't take away.
I know. Thank you.
God, these people, this is so drunk. We should stop serving grain alcohol. It shows.
What do you mean it's not malt liquor?
We make it.
It's $2.99.
That's our toilet Four Loko special brand that we make. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The Four Loko. Yes. Yeah. I had a Four Loko. I'm going to tell one Four Loko story and I'll move on. And years ago, we'll push it years ago.
Okay.
Me and some guys, were out just hanging bar scene, come back to my house and we started playing Call of Duty. Then we upped it and we're like, let's do Four Loko Call of Duty. We're talking maybe like Black Ops days. I can't remember exactly what Call of Duty there's a,
sure,
there's some beef in the community right now, but
yeah.
Anywho. So basically the rules,
what is entailed in Four Loko. Yeah. Hit me with the rules.
The rules were every time you died, everyone else took a shot. So it was counterintuitive because it was this, I don't know. The way we looked at it was actually try and survive. So you don't destroy everyone else's night. Sure.
Yeah. No, I like that.
It did not work that way. Everybody was just like, I'm dead. Drink, bitches. And so we just kept
using Four Loko.
Of course. Four Loko shots.
Whew. Sweet Christ. Yeah. Have you ever done a drinking game that I enjoy is Mario Kart drunk driving. So it's where you everyone starts the race at the same time. you have to finish your drink and a full drink before the end of the race, and you can either be driving or drinking, but not at the same time. So a lot of times partners. The strategy is like, it could be like, so it depends what unit you're playing on, but you could have like four people playing against each other, whatever. But if you're drinking, the controller's down, and so some people do a lap and drink a bunch. Some people, I try to start the race and just chug as much as I possibly can. And then you put down the drink, pick up the controller. But if your drink isn't done by the time the race is over, you're disqualified. So I feel like that's an interesting, it's more real time and like,
yeah, that's fun. Yeah,
I like it. I enjoy it.
I would totally.
It's a bad decision.
I would totally play that game with you, Dave. I would do it.
We should. Let's do it, man. Let's do it. We should
live stream that. I would show up for that party.
Let's get what would be an awesome adult beverage sponsor for that.
Wow. There we go. That's the, man, who would sponsor some drunk Mario Kart? They would actually be promoting social engagement, hanging with your friends in person versus online.
Yeah.
Safe drinking. You're at the house.
Yeah,
I wouldn't call it safe drinking per se.
And it would be at an abusive level. And we're even the name of the game itself is even kind of poking fun at real drunk driving. But, so we got to find a brand that really doesn't give a shit about themselves.
I mean, hey, Four Loko, we got stories, right? We got history. I think everybody has a Four Loko story. And if you don't, go get one.
Yeah.
Have an experience. Yeah, dude,
you aren't living if you haven't done terrible things, man, on Four Loko.
I know that there's a lot going on in the drug community. Not that I do drugs at that rate to where I have like common knowledge from the kingpins downtown, but everything's laced with fentanyl. Like just get the game is over because everybody just wants that little extra hit. You know, you're chasing the dragon. Yep. With Four Lokos, it's ABV, every can, unfiltered. Four Loko, where are you at, dude? Come on. Let's go.
They had to change their formula because there was something about, because they were like,
is it made people black out
with also? Yeah. I mean, it was like filled with like caffeine and guarine or whatever, but like, they're trying to make it like as a fuck up your current state as much as possible type thing. And you can now, I have a friend who's like obsessed with original formula Four Loko, and you can find cans on eBay for like $80 a pop. So
there's like loyalists out there.
Yeah. If you're a purist, Four Loko purist. Mm-hmm.
Would that be the same as like a metal elitist?
Like, okay. I don't know. Yeah, sure. Yeah. We'll say it's the same. Yeah. Have you had Malorts before?
No, thank you. Mm-mm. I can't even smell it. I can't. Okay. No.
So you're aware of it, but yes, but you've not had it.
I'm not going to either.
Okay. Don't.
Don't you
it
force
is the
me.
Worst. I'm trying to think. I had fermented shark in Iceland, and that is the only worst thing that has ever been in my mouth, where it just like sets up shop in your nostrils and sinuses. And it's just like, Malort's is like, if you could liquefy pepper, like ground pepper, and put in just a smattering of whatever is under your kitchen sink right now. And I mean, it burns, it smells fucking rancid. It is the reigning champ. I defy anyone to present something that is worse than Malort.
I don't.
Something that's like actually approved to be sold in bottles. You know, I'm sure that there are worse things. Like, yeah. But it's technically consumable by the by the powers that be. But it is,
or just
holy shit,
your cousin Vinny, dad, eat it, fucking champ, or whatever. I don't know.
Oh.
How are you been?
Do you remember that movie? Do you remember that movie pretty well, My Cousin Vinny?
I actually just watched it the other day.
Oh, what is on the menu, breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Bro.
At the diner. They only have one place that they can go to.
They only go to the one spot.
And there's only one thing on the menu for all three meals. It's a very Southern thing.
It's got to be
even though the movie.
Grits?
It is grits.
Yes.
That is the correct
answer. Yeah, because, yeah, because
he was like, plate of grits.
He's like,
yes.
Now you're telling me that you're the whatever, you can cook your grits in 5 minutes. And he's like, well,
Yeah.
Watch that show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that movie's great. I always get Mira Sorvino and Alyssa Milano confused. Are either of those women? One of who is his assistant, who's like the tire expert?
I know. On a 63 four-barrel car.
Dude, that's a really good impression. That was pretty good.
I can do impressions. I get like, not that I actively try. I don't know.
It's probably a good idea. Yeah.
I should try.
It was Marissa Tomei.
Tomei. Yes.
Okay. And she, interestingly, so that movie is like decidedly a comedy. Like it is.
Yes. 100%.
It's a comedy. Comedy and horror, two genres in the film world, but certainly with the Academy that just gets shit on, like totally dismissed right out the gate. Like if you are a comedy or a horror movie, like you're not even in consideration for almost any category. Certainly anything that's like televised.
It's like metal at the Grammys.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, there are like, yes, agreed. But,
I know. Lamb of God.
Marissa Tomei won best. I don't know if it's actress or supporting. No, she'd be a best actress because she's like a main character. Anyways, it was just very unexpected that she, I mean, it's a great performance, but it's just like historically when you look at every year, it's always these like historical pieces, like really like slavery movies, people with special needs, triumphant sports stories,
Uncle Buck,
like huge scale war movies. No, okay. Uncle Buck is not getting nominated. So like I don't really understand the intricacies of the Academy and how that works, but it's just an undeniable reality that like the same type of movie tends to get nominated every single year. So
yeah, dude,
I like it when that gets switched up. Like it was wild to me that, Parasite, which it's like a psychological thriller, but, I was surprised to see that win Best Picture because everything else it was up against was by the book, like what you would expect to see be nominated for Best Picture.
Right. It's crazy. I understand that there are experts out there that, you know, understand cinematography and production and scoring and everything. Just to make this just me and you idiots in front of our own cameras, like,
yeah,
it takes a lot to produce some stuff like this. And we're just, we're just shooting the shit, hanging out. And, you know, because of our knowledge over the years of doing this, we understand it takes X, Y, and Z to, you know, not only produce it, but to produce it well. I mean, look at your music, dude. Your music is taking off. Like, come on. Give that guy a clap. Give him a clap.
Get it. Yay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I wanted to start this conversation that we're having now 30 minutes ago, but I was just doing an interview. So I've, since the last time you and I talked, I've secured a publicist, which is really exciting for me. And she's been really,
she's been crushing it, dude.
She's been crushing it. Like literally from the day we first talked and said like, okay, let's work together. From that, the moment she got off that phone call, she introduced me to, essentially Morgan Rose and his business partner, Morgan Rose of Seven Dust. I reached out to you, as soon as that happened. And then since then, she's just been setting up like interview after interview. I did like 7 interviews.
Damn.
Week, including some shows in Australia, which is really cool. Like knowing that my music is being, listened to and supported on the other side of the planet is fucking amazing. And so far, with the exception of like one, I can tell within the first 30 seconds of a call, either a call or a, you know, video thing, if it's going to be a good conversation. And it's all about like the energy that someone's bringing to the,
I cannot stress. So for whoever's listening to this, 1 to 1,000.
Yeah.
If you have a podcast, you feel this visceral. I know I do because I join, you know, chat rooms just like this, talking to fucking complete strangers. And I have to make it feel as fluid as this. Like it's a fucking, it's an art, but it's also as a committed content creator, days you got to bite the bullet and just, man, this one is not going well, but
you know, that scene from Talladega Nights where Ricky Bobby wins the race and he's being interviewed and he's like, my car's like a spaceship. It went real fast. And his arms keep raising up like into the screen. Just like he doesn't know. He's like, I don't know what to do with my hands. I've done a lot of podcast stuff. I did in a not so previous life, did a lot of like, with clients, I'll go to like off-roading events or professional fishing tournaments or whatever. And I get on the boat with these fishermen and I like document their process and then they win a gold trophy and I interview them about it. It's amazing how someone can go from this like super loquacious, chatty, personable person. And then they see that red light on the camera and they're like, I did some good fishing was good.
It was amazing.
I'm not a fish. Yeah, it's wild.
I am not a fish.
Yeah. I mean, I would even think that with like, with you, with all the bands that you interview, just because someone is good on stage and some people actually aren't good on stage. I'm saying like performance wise, like them have like extending their personality into something that is being consumed by the audience. In addition to the music, there are some people who have like a stage persona
that 100%.
Does not exist when they get off stage. You put a microphone in front of their face or they're talking, even if they're not being recorded, just talking to fans. They're like, no eye contact, not speaking complete sentences, swallowing the end of their words. Like it is definitely, it's a skill set that needs to be massaged.
I have this wild idea. I just need like to figure out how to make it happen. But basically, like, you know, the street interviews that you see just, you know, wherever.
Yeah. Jay Leno, the Kimmel, man on the street type shit.
Yeah. Just, you know, I forget what they call that. Not shock TV, but just, you know, right there in the moment. I want to do that in the merch line and just, you know, kind of like how they've been doing it, like all the Trump rallies, just walking up to people, asking them questions, just literally just walking the merch line. Hey, what do you think about, the stuff going on? And, you know, and just like hit them with a topic or even like some controversial metal stuff. Like, what do you think about Sleep Token, getting doxxed, you know, or, you know, and then record it. That's, you know, I heard it in the merch line. Something.
I do that. I love that. I think that's great. Speaking of, I want to get the band name correct. Did you hear the story? This came out 2 days ago or yesterday about the band.
Bro, if it's about the testosterone estrogen cutter.
Estrogen.
Yes. What is going on in the world?
I'm looking up the,
okay.
Who is this?
While he's looking it up, I'll hit you with the quick tips.
Do it.
There's a band that kicked out a member because they found out that he was so about one of the band members' fiance that he cut that dude's pre-workout with estrogen
for a very long period of time.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, dedication. Morals and ethics aside, dedication, the dude's got. I'll give him that. Yeah. But what? This is why I watch movies and documentaries about serial killers, is because I want to figure out what's going on in your head. Like, I would, not that I want to be in those shoes, but I would like to at least be able to comprehend it to where I can go, you know what? I actually know what you're talking about. Yes, there are people talking in my head too that are telling me this is a good idea, right? Like, God, I wish I could feel that.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense.
It's fascinating. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Hardcore band fire singer for dosing basis with estrogen. The Nashville-based band Lorona, L-L-O-R-O-N-A, has parted ways with vocalist Diego over alleged diabolical plot. This story, like, this is not like an enormous band, and this band, like, the story around
it's on like just, Lamb Goat and Metal Injection.
Yeah. It's
like, it's hitting numbers.
Fucking wild, dude. Like, there's something like scary, you know, I make music by myself. I don't think people understand when you have a band that is a functional band or whatever, it's not just about like, oh, can you play bass and can you play guitar and can this guy sing? Like, these human beings also need to like live together and coexist in some sense of harmony, especially if they're like grinding it out in a shitty passenger van for 60 shows in a row or something. So like
hustling,
it really is pretty amazing when you find that sweet spot of like really talented musicians who also, you know, jive together very well, personality wise. But conversely, think of anyone who's ever had a bad roommate before, multiply that by four. And then now you also depend on that shitty roommate to like, I don't know, feed your family and
or the amount of things that CDs. Can go.
Yeah, exactly. The amount of things that can go wrong with that is wild. So the fact that this was a, like this band was, after reading into it, like they were a band for a while. And this guy just formed this obsession over the lead singer's fiance. And I guess from what I understand, the way it came out is the guitar player and the drummer got this guy hammered.
Right.
And he like drunkenly admitted to them in almost like a ha ha way of like,
hey, I just dosed you with estrogen. You probably called him a I don't know. Sorry. Yeah. I shouldn't have said that, but you know, like that bro, like,
yeah, I mean, that was the plan. Literally the plan was to effeminate the singer. This stream of logic is fucking wild. So the idea is to remove the singer from the line of competition to win this woman's heart. So the singer's already engaged this woman, and bass players, as the article said, diabolical plot is, I guess he worked at like GNC or something. And so he was giving the band like supplements or whatever stuff that they wanted. And he was cutting the singer's pre-workout. You know, he was like the source for it all the time. And he was in his mind, his genius plan was, I'm going to give this guy tits essentially and make him some like soy boy type thing. And that this woman will fall out of love with him. So that's
in
like
love part, with me.
That's such a huge part B. Like part A is like, you just want to make this guy unattractive
right.
by literally poisoning him with estrogen. And then in his mind, he's like, and then obviously the next logical step of that plan is then she loves me.
I mean,
and then
what else the is end? There, Dave? Come
does
on.
Does the band keep going and you just have the girl now? Like, and dude, you have to wonder with something like that, like, or what, to what lengths was he willing to go?
Like how far was far? To him, yeah, that like, was not a, to him, that wasn't far. That was a rational thing to do. You know what?
Yeah. And this guy was having like actual medical complications, because that's a big fucking thing to anyone who's like transitioned or whatever can tell you that like when you introduce these, testosterone or estrogen into your body, especially in a non-regulated way, the way that a doctor would with like, you know, doses that phase up over time. This is basically like, just this guy being like, bah, bah, bah. He's literally dosing you with the intention of malintent, not to help you, you know, transition into your true identity. So like I do think that it's him getting kicked out of the band is the least of his worries. Like,
correct.
He's going to go to prison.
Yeah. Like, he's got criminal charges coming.
Yeah, he poisoned someone. This is
reminiscent of the, like I said, the forensic files that I watch where they're like, Jerry 63 of Baltimore, Maryland, found dead in his driveway, blah, 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 blah. And his wife doesn't know what's going on. You know, like all this shit. Right. And you're like, how did Jerry die? Like what happened? And then come to find out that, you know, his wife, Ethel, has been dosing him with coolant, you know,
fucking Ethel, dude.
Before they, you know, stopped making it sweet. They would just, dose them with cool. And, you know, arsenic's always a good one. What else?
Do you remember the shit that went down with All That Remains? This was like seven or 8 years ago. So
All That Remains is one of my starter bands, dude. Tell me.
So their guitar player, who's virtuoso level, super talented. And the fact that they replaced him with Jason Reeves Richardson shows the level of respect that he had earned in the community and to bring such a guitar giant,
gifted fellow,
to replace you. Yeah. I think the guy's name was Ola. You know, this will be where it pops up on the screen, but he drowned on his own property in a tiny pond in his backyard, essentially. And the more that came out about it, it was so unbelievably suspect, and all signs were pointing to his wife did this, including like his will and life insurance policy were updated 2 days before his accidental death.
Suspect.
And there was a bunch of other like paperwork that came to light that showed, as far as I know, like there has been no charges filed, but like all that remains was like being very vocal about like, we know who did this. It's this person. Like start doing some digging. And like, I don't think all that remains.
Like there's no need to go, where's Waldo? The killer is here. Like, yeah. Stop flipping through the book and look, it's right here. Here's the striped shirt person right here. Man, that's crazy, yeah, dude.
The title of this article is Unresolved But Not Forgotten. Years later, family bandmates of All That Remains guitarist still hope someone will be held responsible for his death. We're taking a look back at the death of 44-year-old Oliver Ollie Herbert, who was found dead behind his Stafford Springs home 2.5 years ago. This came out in 2021. His death has been labeled suspicious, but no charges were filed against anyone. Yeah.
What?
The lead singer said, when I think about it, my fondest memories begin with Otis swimming and boating. To say that, like, the likelihood of him drowning when he was like a very proficient swimmer,
yes,
and highly unlikely.
Side note, about, you can drown in an inch of water.
That's true. You can, which is scary.
It's wild. I used to be a instructor of water survival for the Marine Corps, and I literally had to teach people how to survive in the event that they had to jump off of a ship, just because the Marines are a subsidiary of the Department of the Navy. So, sure. Every Marine has to know how to swim at least to a certain level. And I had to teach these people, son, literally the day before I went to boot camp, I was at a swim meet and won first place in everything. So swimming to me is very easy, and watching people drown in 3 foot of water, like, you know, the minute the water gets in their face, like it's game over.
Yeah.
Again, I this is why I love talking to people. Like, get inside their head, figure out what's going on.
I'm just watching this Channel 5 thing, which the guy who did All Gas No Brakes, blanking on his name right now,
knocking it out of the park.
Yeah, and he does a good job of vacillating between like, this is a story of real substance that I don't think anyone's covering, and then like, here's Daytona Beach spring break.
Yeah.
And he does a great job of like doing so. He just did this whole series on the border crossing, and he actually like,
yeah, he was down there.
And then he illegally crossed and documented the whole process where he like hired coyotes, which are the people that get you across. And he actually gets arrested and spends 4 days in a detainment center with his cameraman. Anyway, the whole thing is interesting, but a big part of it is they talk about the mortality rate of people crossing the river. Just, I think it's the Rio Grande, like that. The river in and of itself can be a force to be reckoned with, also Texas and Arizona have been doing a great job of making it more difficult and deadly.
Oh yeah.
For these people to cross, which is obviously a whole other horrific thing, but he shares these stats about how, like, it's to your point about swimming being easy.
Correct.
The majority of the planet does not know how to swim.
Correct.
And there's definitely socioeconomic parallels between your level of wealth and your ability to swim. It just is. But that's still, people are seeking such refuge from whatever it is they're escaping that they will risk that to get to the other side. Like, it's wild. But getting back to drowning here, speculation surrounding Herbert's death started pouring in immediately shortly after his pass. And they played a show 5 days before he died. So this wasn't like he had disappeared into obscurity and then we showed up dead.
This wasn't, he had some known disease and it was going to get him. Yeah. This is just, oh, he's dead. Bye.
Yeah. Shortly after his passing, his wife, Elizabeth Herbert, attempted to put speculation to rest by posting on his official Facebook page. She started stating that Ollie had drowned and went on to say Ollie was apparently self-treating for manic depression. Antidepressants were found in his system as well as a sleep aid. But Ollie's family and friends couldn't imagine it was anything self-inflicted, arguing it wasn't his character. And then they go on to quote some people, friends and family and band members, saying he was very diligent about what he put into his body. He wasn't a drug user. I know that for a fact. He wouldn't put weird substances into his body. And then someone else says, definitely no drugs at all. Even if he wanted to hide something like that, he wasn't clever enough to hide that. according to our partners at the Hartford Courant, the state medical examiner ruled that he drowned in water only a few inches deep. Boom. Like you just said. However, the cause of death remains undetermined, which that's fucked. Like, he drowned, but the cause of death is undetermined.
Yeah, which is wild because that means Lord. So basically, Yes. And the way they found out that he drowned is they looked inside his lungs and had obviously that's how it works. Yeah,
and his body allegedly was found face down
in the water.
Yeah, exactly.
So he could have been knocked unconscious.
Yeah. There's a multitude. Yes, for sure. Yeah. He could have, he could have technically, cause you involuntarily breathe. So if you drug someone or knock them out or whatever, and then stick their face in water, they will drown. Although you're the reason he died, but not your heart stopped beating because of the inhalation of water.
Yeah. Everyone dies of cardiac arrest, guys. That is just proven.
That's So
your heart stops.
COVID doesn't kill anyone. Heart problems do.
Right.
After Herbert's passing, his family and bandmates questioned the timing and circumstances of a will that surfaced with his alleged signature. According to the Hartford Courant, his will was notarized at a car dealership in Hartford 1 week before he was found dead. So
why not?
Well, 1 week before he dies, it was notarized at a car dealership. The lead singer of All That Remains says, he wouldn't think to get a will. There were times where we would barely get him to buy new shoes. After 2.5 years, Cynthia, Phil, and Mike remain cautiously optimistic that in the end, there will be justice for Ollie. I have faith in the justice system. I hope they have enough evidence to convict the person who did this. If it happens this year, great. If it happens in 5 years, great.
Bro. We got to send this story to the crime junkie. Dude, I'm telling you, these girls are like just the stories that they tell, like the way that they paint the picture and the research that they do is like when I was out there just me and the pools and I needed something to do, I listened to a banana hammock.
Yeah,
that's it, man. Just getting it.
Slinging that down.
Maybe not so much, but I would listen to them, but they were always saying, hey, if there's a story that actually has some teeth, like send it to us. And I've always been in the back of my head. Like, I wonder, you know, that's it, man. That's it. Send me that article. I'll do it.
I will. And I feel like that didn't even scratch the surface. There was a lot of really text messages and
there's
emails.
There's a lot there.
For sure. Yeah. Totally agree.
And now I got this calling stuck in my head. And I hear this calling. That was one of my first favorite songs. Metal. Really? That one. Yep. That whole album. Yep. It was good. Good stuff. Mid-2000s? 04, I think.
Trying to think of like I know my first.
Yeah.
The first CD I bought was, what's his name? Tom Cochran, the guy who did Life is a Highway. That's the first CD that I ever bought.
I don't know. I can't remember the first CD, but in terms of like just when I started dabbling into the metal. Yeah. It was that one. And then also adjacent to that was As Blood Runs Black and All Shall Perish. So that was cool.
What do you remember what specifically? Because again, you had never purchased a metal album before then. So like why that one of all of the ones that you had?
One of them just had a wild ass cover. I think that was As Blood Runs Black. Yeah, I think that was right.
Mm. With a name like that, I would think it would be a very muted visuals.
Yeah, so. I think it was like green splat. Oh, who gives a shit? Anyway. This is not about me, Dave.
Hell yeah. Metallica was the first concert that I went to. I went with my best friend and his parents at the time. I was in second grade and it blew my mind, dude. Like, especially there was this part of this happened at every tour stop, but second grade Dave didn't know this. There's a part of the show where like a dude in the rafters, like there's an explosion in the rafters above the stage and a guy like falls and the lights in the entire, like it goes pitch black as the guy like hits the ground. This is all like masterfully orchestrated, but like, me and my second grade buddy were like, holy shit, what the fuck's going on? And then like, the lights go out. People are going crazy. They don't know what's going on. And then there's like literally a single like 80 watt light bulb that's lowered from the rafters. And James Hetfield comes out and plays, I don't know, Unforgiven or something like that. But it was, it was great. It definitely set the bar pretty high for like shows moving forward.
I do hate that I was never introduced to bands like that to where I could go see them prior to their excessiveness now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Point in case, when I was, you know, getting my jam on, I love The Used and A Day to Remember. Like those bands just they were fucking hot back in the day. Still are.
Yeah. Actually, and just was talking about both of those bands in the previous podcast.
Oh, nice. My very first experience of a really like large scale, well, I guess large scale show here in Austin was when the Used and A Day to Remember went to like the new Moody Theater outside, sure. Amphitheater, whatever.
Yeah.
I inadvertently got all access pass from a fellow musician, Jose Escudero. And I don't know why I said it like that, but Jose is my boy. Jose is an amazing human being. That dude is an amazing guitar tech. Just an overall good human. So yeah, that my very first time ever seeing the Used and A Day to Remember was all access pass. And I was talking to the drummer, didn't even know it was the drummer. And he's like, what do you do? I was like, I got nothing. I'm just here. I was like, what do you do? He's like, I'm the drummer. Had no clue. I liked his music though. I think that's what counts.
Hell yeah, dude.
What do you do? What do you do whenever you are encountered with a fan that doesn't know you? Or have you ever had that happen?
Wait, say that again.
What? Like, have you ever been in the company of someone that knew like you, like your music, mm-hmm. but they didn't know you personally?
Yeah, that has happened. I would say it definitely, I mean, it happens all the time on social media.
Oh, of course. Of course.
And then I'll meet people like when I did the Nothing More tour, there were and the Raw tour, there were several people who came out in these different markets that I would be meeting for the first time that I'd had some degree of correspondence with on like Facebook or Instagram for months or years leading up to that. And, you know, they know a specific version of me because the way that we represent ourselves on social is typically, you know, a very curated select version.
No,
you know, I'm not going to hop on and do a video with you when I'm like depressed and hungover or something. So
those are the best days though, Dave.
Yeah.
My guy.
But there's this like parasocial bond thing that's becoming more of an issue that I've had with a few people. And while I'm very appreciative of like what that's rooted in terms of like an appreciation for mm-hmm. what I'm doing, like, and I don't say this to be an asshole, but like, we aren't friends. I don't know you. So that like, we're not going to like,
wait, are you talking to me or the collective, those people?
These people that I've run into before were like,
Dave, what the fuck, bro? Like, you know me. We've shared Thanksgiving White Claws together, yeah, my guy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. No, it's just like I also share a lot of my personal life on social media. Like, yeah,
you're pretty open about some things.
Yeah. And a big reason is because the response that I get is a lot of people, that it's like a vicarious thing for them where they're like, it makes me happy to hear that you deal with imposter syndrome or that you've came from an abusive household or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's cathartic to me to share that stuff. And it's, makes me happy to know that it helps with other people, but like, that still doesn't mean.
Don't fucking ask me every day.
Kind of like, it's just like to meet me for the first time, but have that energy of like, we are friends. I don't know. I'm not, it's hard to say that without sounding conceited or something, like you got to earn that. But like, literally we have no interpersonal connection. We've never met before. You got to build up to that stuff, including like trust and personal boundaries and stuff. And I just think a lot of people get so used to, especially people who grow up with a phone in their hand, is they're like, well, you know, I see you every day, literally, because of your videos or content or comments or whatever. And it just, I think in certain people's mind, they're just like, that weighs just as much as knowing my next door neighbor or a coworker that I've seen 5 days a week for 10 years or whatever. And the reality is it's not. So I would just encourage people listening to like, have some perspective on the connections that you have with people that you meet online, and just, you know, work up to be a normal human.
Yes.
How about that?
God almighty. I was saying to my wife the other day, God, how do I say this? So let's just say that there's a student that is in high school today. Today's high school is obviously not our high school.
Yeah, of course.
And I made this comment that I personally think that some of the kids, I would even go as far as a majority of the kids, really don't take their classes as seriously as they should, because they can simply go, I can just look it up. Why do I need to commit this to memory? I can literally just look up what is the square root of blah, 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 or, you know, what were the exact dates of the Civil War? Like,
yeah,
I can just look it up. So there's this activeness of not, I don't give a shit, but maybe, oh God, I don't know. This is where the conversation kind of got stalled. We just really didn't know where to take it. You know, what's after, okay, so what, we take their phone, like, should every, I personally am of the mindset that every classroom, there should be the little phone pocket pouches.
Sure.
Like, it's still accessible, but obviously it goes like do not disturb. And a part of the school policy would be that, yes, everyone is on do not disturb while in class in the phone pouches, but you have the emergency contact list preloaded. So that way, if it is an emergency during class, ding, 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 ding. Oh, fuck. Sure. Right?
Yeah.
But everything else, like, fuck that piece of technology. It's a great thing. It's a great thing.
Agreed.
But I really do agree with you that, you know, to be a normal human, it, like, you, God, man, you got to fucking talk to people. Yeah. You have got to have conversations. You've got to get out of your fucking comfort zone, make a few mistakes, you know. Don't say too many racist things and you'll be all right. You'll be all right. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, even when I was working at ad agencies before starting my own business, the amount of people, young people that I would interview for like internships or junior level positions, experience is one thing, but like, I need to know, like, if you literally cannot look me in the eyes while we are having a conversation about whether or not you are going to step foot in this building again, then like, I can, obviously can't trust you in front of clients,
right,
or to represent the agency well. And it's amazing how damaging social media, the ubiquity of cell phones, has been to in-person interpersonal communication. It's wild. It's,
here's a thought. Mental exercise for you. What do you think America's social, I guess, network or social life look like if America actually had some of the, what's the word, dictatorship-y stuff going on, like where China? Like, yeah, exactly. Where like the internet is throttled and X stuff isn't allowed.
Yeah, like, you literally cannot use TikTok in between. It's something like 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. or something. Like, it literally does not work.
Yeah. Yeah, the government set up time limits on its people, and they're cool with it. All right, let me take that back. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. They're not cool. There are some that are. There are. I fucking misspoke. My bad. I was just rolling. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's they're there. They live there. They have to live there. You know, obviously, there's just, you know, there's people in the world that literally just can't move. Right. You know?
Yeah.
God, for fuck's sakes.
I mean, it enters into a very slippery slope of what does freedom mean? Government overreach, things of that nature. You know, is it anti-democratic? Is it against, you know, what would Thomas Jefferson think about TikTok being throttled between 9 p.m.? but honestly though, like, that
TJ
is the question.
TJ would be like, thou shalt not throttleth TikToketh. I don't. Yeah.
And I'm going to go have sex with my slaves. Yeah,
exactly. We're going to procreate.
Yeah. What a wonderful human.
I'm going to go hammer out 2/3 of this equation. If you know what I'm saying? Wow. That's a deep cut, boys. Well, That's a deep cut.
Well played. So I think social media is going to become, it will need to become such an undeniable society degrading epidemic within our country before real change happens, even remotely resembling the example that you're giving of China throttling internet speeds and certain apps not working. But I think 9.9 out of 10 psychiatrists, sociologists, whatever, would tell you that the ubiquity of social media and related things, including everyone having a cell phone in their pocket, has been like absolutely detrimental to, by so many metrics, a bad thing for
even the guy that created the internet was like, fuck. Just, oh God. Here's another thought exercise for you. Imagine being that guy now, like, you're like, just pretend you were young enough when you created it and you are now what? We'll just say 60. You're 60. Is that guy still alive? Hold on. I can just look it up.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
There's one. Yeah.
This is where it's helpful.
Yes. The internet being like a encyclopedia of accessible information is great.
Dude, my grandma, actually my mamaw, mamaw, you got to hit them with it. Mamaw actually has a full collection of,
Britannica.
Yes. And to include the World Atlas and like some other, I remember, oh God, here we go. Rabbit hole time. Who that is listening to us remembers when they used to actually try and sell us Britannicas, the encyclopedias. And then God, you get the annual update. Then you have like the bonus add-ons.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I want those so bad. I don't want the land. I just want that piece of history. Like, I think that is, you know,
why?
Just because like to kind of show where we were at as just as humans at that time, looking backwards.
Yeah, I would be curious. I'm sure someone's done this, but I would be curious to have a modern, credible institution peer review the factual nature of, because some of these things are like, history is told by winners of wars, not losers. And we've already seen in a lot of like academic textbooks, how whitewashed and how like, I mean, slavery is literally not mentionable in certain academic circles of the States. And that's not just a current thing. Like that's been for a long time, or this like ridiculous story of the Pilgrims and Native people being friendly and exchanging maize and having the first thing. Like it's wild. So it's entirely possible that those encyclopedias are full of cherry-picked inaccuracies.
Part of the fun. It's
more than likely. Yeah.
Part of the fun. Speaking of whitewashed histories, I was raised in North Carolina, went to all the schools, you know, elementary, middle, high. I did not know about the Wilmington Massacre of 1898. I didn't know about that. It's like blew my mind whenever I actually learned about it. I think within the past 5 to 10 years. Yeah. Definitely last 5 years. It's insane. Yeah. It's insane. And that happened in the state that I grew up in. Didn't it not? And U.S. history was one of my favorite subjects because Miss Kennedy was a rock star. Shout out to my teachers.
You know, it's interesting to think, put yourself in Miss Kennedy's shoes. When do you think she made a conscious decision to not, do you think she was told that was school policy? Like part of the syllabus is like, you were not including this, like
where I grew up in Central North Carolina, I'll just call them out. East Montgomery High School, Flying Eagles
blast.
Well, technically that school no longer exists because so many people have exited the area. They had to consolidate the two high schools, East versus West. So now there is
you were the Flying Eagles.
No, just the Eagles, East Montgomery Eagles. Yeah.
Okay.
I would have to say that there was a curriculum aspect to it that was probably outside of her control. I really genuinely believe that about Miss Kennedy. She seemed like a very solid, you know, fact-driven person. And but I still think that the curriculum was definitely fucking swayed.
I had a senior year high school economic professor. His name was Mr. Stanky. That was actually his name. And he was, I'd have never done a background check on him, but according to him, he worked for like in his 20s, 30s, and early 40s. He worked on Wall Street. You're right there.
Stanky and the background story.
It gets better. So, he worked on Wall Street for many, many years. And then for whatever, like, family reason or whatever, he ended up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in this suburb Brookfield where I grew up, and he's my economics teacher, and he would like actively divert from the syllabus, and you know, like we had a textbook that we're supposed to be reading, but some days he'd be like, you know, we're not going to do this chapter, we're going to watch Roger and Me so you can understand by Michael Moore, so you can understand how Flint, Michigan collapsed. He was really focused on like, I want you to actually understand real world economic forces in the country.
Ramifications and consequences.
You are seniors in high school. You're going to be entering this world pretty fucking soon. And it doesn't, like, you understanding the definition of supply and demand isn't as important as you understanding how we treat minimum wage. And if you raise minimum wage, how does that, like, what's understanding where the poverty line is at versus what minimum wage is and what percentage of Americans work minimum wage jobs. Mm-hmm. That's contextualized is way more important than just, I'm going to give you a textbook to regurgitate back at me and then maybe forget all that. Anyways, he got in some hot water where he, for 1 week, this was definitely not on the syllabus. He had us play Stankopoly, which is the combination of Stanky and Monopoly. Okay. And he divided the class into, so we played Monopoly, but he had special rules. Oh. And this was supposed to be a learning experience. So every team of four was two white guys, a girl, and then a minority. And most of the girls were white. This is just the kind of demographic break it's down, okay, Dave, of the
we
school
know you were generous. Raised yeah. in a safe area.
Exactly. So two white guys, a woman, and a minority of whatever gender, but definitely a minority, a non-white right. person. So the rules were two white guys start with everything that you start with in Monopoly. The women start with half the money, and if they want to, it was something like if they wanted to buy a hotel or a house or something, they had to wait a fee. They had to, like, they, let's say they owned all the green properties. They would have to circle the entire board one more time after acquiring that property before they could have that conversation with the bank. And then the minority gets skipped every other turn. It was just like, had these rules to be like, this is a very like,
wow,
simplistic way for me to help you understand. Honestly, this, he could have said like, this term wasn't floating around yet, but like, basically I'm going to explain white privilege via Monopoly. That's kind of what he did. He's just like, I want you to understand in some simplistic, relatable terms.
Dude, he fucking nailed it.
Yeah. And wow, he got fucking strung up for it big time. Like, there were a lot of parents that were complaining. We had to abruptly stop. It was like, started on Monday, and then Thursday he came in and he was like, well, I guess we're not doing this anymore because some of your parents have a problem with it. So, and just totally scrapped it. But I think we need more teachers like
hell that. Yeah. Need more stanky teachers.
Yeah, like stankonomics, baby.
Dude, you can't beat. I mean, I actually have a Monopoly edition called The Divided House. It's blue versus red. And okay. I've opened it, but I've yet to play it because Ellie won't. It's not a board game person.
I'll come play with you.
Come play with me, man. Let's do it, man. We'll live stream that too. I don't care.
Love it. Well, my friend, we're hitting the hour mark here and,
oh my God, we have.
Yeah. I could always, you know, continue chatting with you, but let's call it a night here and
save it for the bitches.
Yeah, we'll get this chopped up. And again, thank you for listening. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, please. And we're going to just keep pumping out these episodes. So thanks for listening to the Mind Meld podcast. Wow, I couldn't even say it right. Why don't you say it? Why don't you say it, Ryan, if that's your real name?
I've been deceiving you all this time, my guy.
I knew it. Busted.
Thanks for hanging out with me and Dave here at the Mind Meld podcast. Shameless plug, go listen to local music. Okay.
Well played.
I'll see you later, man.
All right. Don't get on me too soon.